Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
Welcome back. Silver and Black Today, powered by our friend Sam and Ash, injury attorneys, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. 2020, the year that's going to 2020 again for the Raiders. Breaking news, of course, if you haven't heard already, Ian Rappaport and others now reporting nearly the entire Raiders starting defense is going on the COVID-19 list because of high-risk close contacts. But the good news there, wrapped in all that shock, is they would all be eligible to play in the game Sunday against the Chiefs if they continue to test negatively. So there you go. The craziness that is this year. And we said, this is Scott Gulbranson, by the way. My co-host Q Myers joins me now. And Q, we've said all season, man, you just never know when hammers are going to drop. And these Raiders, despite having such a good year thus far and really fighting through adversity, are faced with yet another monumental task, this time COVID-related. And hopefully those guys all test negative and they can play on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly, man. It's another case of, something that's less than ideal. That's what I tweeted out. And I know that's like an understatement, but I mean, it is what it is at this point. And it's something that you had to know when we were talking about Clelee Ferrell and LaMarcus Joyner being put on the COVID-19 reserve list yesterday on the show. You had to know that at some point contact tracing was going to kick in and we were going to see, is it going to be, high risk or is it not going to be high risk? And we saw what happened with the offensive line. Well, a few weeks later, we're seeing what's happened with the defensive line. And again, very much less than ideal.
Very much so. And of course, it comes at the worst time, right? Things like this never happen. There's never a good time for this to happen, Q. But we're talking about, yes, Chiefs week, rivalry week. This is, a huge, huge game. Sunday Night Football, again, the last time the Raiders were going to be on Sunday Night Football against Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, we know what happened. The game got moved because the entire offensive line had to do the same thing. And so now you're sitting here and you're saying to yourself, okay, what's going on? But again, I want to accentuate the positive here, because as long as none of those guys test positive, they can play. But a massive distraction in a week you don't want them. And by the way, not only on the day this happens, the NFL has also told all the teams throughout the league that they have to move to the intensive protocol situation to limit COVID-19. That includes everybody wearing masks all the time. That includes some more testing, meaning that you have to test negative the day before you come back into the facility. All sorts of new regulations as we see spikes throughout the country. We see spikes in the NFL. And so now the Raiders are touched by this again. And, I was talking to JT as he was going. By the way, JT's show honoring Ricky Ricardo, just fantastic radio. If you missed it, go back to lvsportsnetwork.com later this evening and listen to the show. Like I said, I had never gone to Rando. Q, you talked about it on your podcast today as well. Just a great, great way for Raider Nation. And I know how much Ricky's means to the nation. And so listen to Q's podcast. Go and listen to JT's show because they really do capture that and do well honoring the man who meant so much to Raider Nation, Q.
Yeah, that was a big deal, man. Ricky's was a special place. I like to call it the Mecca of Raider Nation. And I know Raider Nation is worldwide, and everyone hasn't been to that nice, great Mecca in San Leandro, California. But man, oh man, that place was special. And it wasn't just watching Raider games and running into an occasional Raider or two or three or 10. But I mean, it was just a special place in general. One of those spots where you walk in, Scott, and Ricky is standing there at the front door with a smile on his face and says, "Hey, Scott, how you doing?" And you wonder, how in the world does he know my name when everyone and their mother comes through here? But I promise you, he must have said my name, Q, about three or four times as I entered the building. It was like, "It's great to see you again, man. It's, this and that." And if I brought someone new there, he'd say, "Here's a glass, a Raiders glass." And he'd say, "Take it home. Remember where you got it." And it was just, he was just such a good dude, man. And so that's just unfortunate. I am glad that the very last time I was in Oakland as the Raiders closed down the Coliseum, December 15th against the Jaguars, they lost that game. Immediately following the game, I promise you, Scott, I got in the Uber and me and the wife went straight over to Ricky's and we finished our Sunday evening right there.
Yeah, and that's what guys like that, like Ricky Ricardo, who have, not only are they proprietors of business that mean a lot to the thing, but you're right. They connect with the fan base. They are Raider Nation. And to me, like I said, I have not been. I did not meet the man. But all I know is that through the 3+ years that I've covered the Raiders, continually heard about Ricky and Ricky's. And so I know how much it meant to the fan base. And I'm so glad that you and then JT here on Raider Nation Radio were able to honor the man. And I know it's probably not enough because you could go on. On and on,
right.
But I know he will never be forgotten, and I'm sure the team will do something special as well. But clearly, the breaking news today with all of this, the entire defense, basically starting defense, on the COVID list, they're going to have to stay home. The meetings, the interesting thing about this, because the NFLQ moved to this intensive protocol, teams were going to have to do meetings remotely anyway.
Right.
So, because when I was talking to JT during one of the break before he got off the air, you know, we were talking about being in the meeting room and getting ready for a game. Well, that was going to change anyway. So again, I'm trying to accentuate some positive here. This was going to happen. They were going to have to do more virtually anyway. So if you're looking at that and you want to not cry in your beer, your coffee, whatever you're drinking at this moment in time, then you have that. And so that's good. So we're going to keep an eye on that throughout the show. As more information breaks, we'll bring it to you.
I got the names.
You got the names.
Yeah.
Roll with it, baby.
Just tweeted out. Ian Rappaport just tweeted it out. I'm sure Vinny can confirm this in a little bit. Jonathan Abram. Malik Collins. Jonathan Hankins. Isaiah Johnson. Arden Key, and Kendall Vickers.
Wow.
Not to mention Cleve Furl and LaMarcus Joyner.
Correct. Yeah, your defensive backfield is completely shot. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
As far as
the D-line and secondary.
Yeah, and so now, you know, again, as we say every time something like this happens, and I can't underscore how important it is to reiterate this because we're all sports fans, we all love football, and we love the Raiders and covering the Raiders. But first and foremost, let's just hope those guys are healthy. Let's hope they all stay on the negative, not just to play, but because we don't want them to get sick. We don't want
for
themselves and their families. Absolutely true. So we'll keep an eye on that. Q, thanks for giving us the names there, and we will. We'll talk with Vinny at 3:40. Before he comes on the air and get the latest from him, because I'm sure his day was blown up and he's running around like a chicken with no head looking for answers and figuring that out.
Never now, a quiet day when it comes to the Raiders in 2020, huh?
Wow. And, you know, you talk about time, like airtime and different times. You know, you have morning shows, you have afternoon shows, you have our show, which is kind of teeters on drive time, and then you have Vinny in drive time. Every time we go on the air, it seems, we have something going on.
Yep.
And sure enough, it's good. But we love that because we can talk to you guys about it as well. The other thing that I want to talk about is a little bit what we're going to do on the show. Some of the plans that we had for the show, I moved around a little bit because of the breaking news. But we're going to be visiting at 2:15 as planned with Danan Hughes. He's a Chiefs broadcaster. He was a former wide receiver. The Chiefs wanted to talk to him about the rivalry. So we'll get his reaction to the news today and talk about the Chiefs game coming up. Then later in the hour, we will talk with Jake Ellman. This was a fun segment that I built in because it's a Wednesday and we're shifting focus to the Chiefs game. But one of the things I saw, this article caught my attention, which was a possible trade that may have been made in 2007. I know you're saying that's 13 years ago, but it could have changed the course of the Raider franchise. And we'll talk a little bit about that. And that would have been surrounding Randy Moss, who was a Raider at the time, and a quarterback you may have heard of. Mr. Aaron Rodgers. We're going to talk to Jake Ellman about that coming up at 2:45. He's from sportscasting.com. Really interesting stuff just as a conversation starter. But then also top of the next hour, Jay Binkley from 610 Sports in Kansas City. The Chiefs have their own COVID issue with their offensive line. So we'll talk to him as well about the game, about the whole the uproar over the buses and all this kind of stuff that just builds into rivalry week. And then, of course, the Q-tip and Vinny later on. But Q, you know, this is something, this Raiders team is something that they've gone through a lot already. And so in some ways, you know, I feel like they're ready for it.
I mean, they're battle tested, that's for sure. You know what I mean? Like, this one thing you could say about this team, you know, is that they've had to deal with some ish. You know, they've had to deal with some real deal stuff this season. And sometimes it's worked out. Sometimes it hasn't. I mean, we go back to the game versus Tampa Bay. That was supposed to be a prime time game. It was moved out of prime time. And, you know, the offensive line missed practice all week long. And the Raiders, well, they just got the rope-a-dope. You know, they got the business given to them. And so who knows how this week's gonna shake out. But, man, again, I go back to less than ideal.
Yes. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a break quicker than usual now because we're going to bring Danan Hughes on here in just a few minutes. And then after that, we're going to get to your calls. I want to hear what you guys have to say. By the way, everybody thinking that the game is going to be moved from Sunday night. So far, our good friend Hondo Carpenter reported, he talked to a source of the league that said, no, there's no plans to do that. Now, if multiple guys test positive off this, which we hope to God that does not happen. If that happens, then all bets are off. But as of right now, there's no plans to move this game from Sunday night. But we want to hear from you, 702-365-9200. Get in line, and we will get you on the air after we talk to Danan Hughes. Okay, going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk Chiefs, we'll talk Raiders here on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black today. Here are your hosts, Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
Silver and Black today, powered by Sam and Ash Injury Attorneys. Visit them at samandash.com. Of course, the breaking news is, if you haven't heard, almost the entire Raiders starting defense now on the COVID reserve list. The good news is if they all test negative, they can play on Sunday against the Chiefs. But huge, huge story breaking as we were coming on the air, so wanted to update you that. Also, Q, another story, Field Yates, ESPN, who seems to have an impeccable source inside the Raiders. Vic Beasley is coming in for a visit. Of course, the defensive end linebacker played with the Falcons and Titans this year.
He's been a bust.
Yes, he has. He has.
I mean, maybe you know, they can help – I don't know, get his career going again.
Yeah.
But he has been a bust, man. Ever since they changed his position in Atlanta, he has not been the same guy.
No, he hasn't. So all sorts of news. We're going to get to your calls, so stay where you are. If you're online, hold on. We'll get to you. 702-365-9200 here on Raider Nation Radio 920 in Las Vegas. We're going out on the Newsmaker in the line now. We're bringing in Danan Hughes. Of course, former Chiefs wide receiver, now does broadcasting for the Chiefs, as well as a bunch of college sports when they're going. And Danan joined us back in October. Danan, welcome back here. A big day in Las Vegas with this COVID news. I know the Chiefs have their own issues, but when you see that almost the entire starting defense goes on COVID reserve, it's a little shocking. But how are you doing today otherwise?
I'm doing all right, man. I mean, you guys in Vegas are rubbing off on me a little bit. I'm rolling the dice here. We lost last time after talking to you, so I might have to hang up real quick or something. I don't know about this.
Yeah, I hear you, man. But I'll tell you, the Chiefs, since that time, of course, the Chiefs have not lost another game. This game coming back, the first time they're going to be playing here in Las Vegas, the Raiders undefeated in division, facing the Chiefs coming in looking for some revenge. It got the fires got stoked a little bit, right, because of the whole bus, the victory lap, supposed victory lap by the Raiders around Arrowhead, and of course, Andy Reid mentions it, then John Gruden mentions it, and those of us who talk for a living or write for a living, we're making a big deal out of it. For the Chiefs, this game is not just the typical division rivalry, but the Chiefs also want to stay pace with the Steelers. Talk about how big of a game this is for Kansas City coming in here to Las Vegas.
Well, it's a huge, huge game for the Chiefs. I mean, you're coming off your bye. You're playing against a team, the only team that beat you. The recipe for success in the NFL is to win your division. It used to be in the old format, you get a home playoff game, and then anything can happen. And now, with the new format, you may or may not get a home playoff game. Depends on how everything unfolds. And you want to stay at pace with being successful in the division. And Andy Reid, during his tenure with the Chiefs, has been nothing less than stellar in facing the Broncos, the Raiders, and obviously the Chargers. So they understand what's on the line, and even though us old school guys remember actual bulletin boards, there's still bulletin board material, and that victory lap around Arrowhead kind of feeds into that. So everything that the coaches always tell us or used to tell us and probably tell the players now about don't give any extra incentive to opponents, you know, don't give them any bulletin board material, that happened, and that's kind of hovering over. So it'll be interesting to see how each team plays with that.
You know, and one of the things I've been saying about that as people have been asking me about that bus trip and that lap and what's that going to do, I keep saying, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, if you need bulletin board material to get fired up for Chiefs and Raiders AFC West action, something's wrong with you to begin with.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, though, but and I don't know if you guys agree with it or not. This rivalry, it hadn't been a real rivalry, considering the history of it. Now, right. And that doesn't necessarily mean wins and losses. I'm not equating it just to wins and losses. It just seems like the nastiness, the bitterness between each of these teams has kind of subsided a little bit. And I don't know if it's just the new age, you know, the players, they know each other, they work out with each other, there's more friendliness and so on and so forth than it used to be in the past, but it just hasn't seemed that way for several years. Now it feels that way, and I think that's pretty cool. I mean, for the fans' perspective, yeah, there's not going to be any fans in the stands, but Sunday Night Football, Raiders Chiefs, I played against the Raiders 12 times in my career, and several of them seem to be on Monday night or Sunday night football. And, like, to me, that was kind of a staple back in the 90s, is that the Raiders and Chiefs were going to be on primetime TV. And now we get that with a good, very improved Raiders team and the defending Super Bowl champs and still very strong Chiefs team. So I think the billing itself and then the added – kind of, you know, you put together that gumbo and you're adding little sprinkles in, and now you got the laps of the victory laps and the big plays that were made against the Chiefs and, you know, all the different things that you sprinkle into that gumbo that'll make it really good. And that's what kind of this game and this matchup looks like.
You mentioned rivalries and how they really haven't been there, you know, and I kind of look at the whole landscape of the NFL and say the same thing. How much of that, in your opinion, has to do with the free agency factor that one guy could be a Raider today and then be a Chief tomorrow?
Well, I think that was, I mean, ever since, you know, Reggie White broke down that barrier back in, early 90s, 92, I want to say, it's kind of opened the door for that. I mean, I played against Chester McLaughlin, and then he was on my team. I played against Leslie O'Neal, and then he was on my team in the late 90s. So you receive them in the locker room. They're your brother. They come. They're on your team now. You know, at the end of my career, I went to the Saints. There's a big thing around Kansas City. We used to play the Saints in training camp practices up in Wisconsin, and we got in a fight. I had just left the Chiefs, and we got in a fight against the Saints. Guess who I was fighting for? The Saints. I mean, that's it. I played 6 years with a lot of the guys that were on the other team, but I was fighting for my boys on the Saints. That was my family at that time. So I think there's still an understanding of that, especially now with some of the business. Guys know a little bit more about the business than maybe we did, and they feel like they can be slighted at times, contracts, negotiations being let go, a lot more trades happening now than they did in the past. So there's always a way, and as an athlete, you always figure out a way to have some kind of extra incentive, something added to get you kind of to the boiling point. And whether it's the business side or knowing guys on the other side or just bragging rights or what have you, that's one of the great things about the NFL is that guys always figure out a way to get that drive. And it's unlike any other sport, because all the other sports, you get to play other teams 2, 3, 4, 5 times in a year, maybe even more, and it's not as physical. Now you get to play a team like the Raiders twice, and only twice, and you get to show up on the field and show what the rivalry is about.
Danan Hughes, of course, former Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver, now does broadcasting for the Chiefs as well as college sports. Excellent on-air guy. And Danan, one of the things you talked about, that rivalry, and when we talked to Rich Gannon about it back in October, he told us, he said one of the reasons the rivalry was, of course, so rich in the 60s and 70s from the AFL into the NFL and the nastiness with those guys that occurred going back even to Lenny Dawson. But then it kind of subsided too a little bit. And then here comes Marty Schottenheimer. And Marty Schottenheimer, your former coach, kind of got it going again. What was, you know, since we can't talk to Coach Schottenheimer, what was Marty's issue with the, why did he dislike the Raiders so much? Or was it for him just a vehicle? But because everyone I've talked to, frankly, tells me that Marty really did not like Al Davis and he did not like the Raiders. Do you know any reason why?
Marty hated Al Davis, period, point blank. He's never made any qualms about it. He absolutely hated Al Davis, and by default, he hated the Raiders. Mm. Then I think there was some added juice to it based on maybe some contention between Lamar Hunt and the Chiefs and Al Davis and the Raiders, going back to the AFL and Al Davis being the commissioner, and there's a lot of history back there that just did not make for – you know, bosom buddies, I guess you can say. So, yeah, Marty absolutely poured fuel on it. And for one, I grew up a Marcus Allen fan. Mm. Even though I was from Jersey, I grew up a Marcus Allen fan. I wouldn't say I was a Raiders fan, but I liked Marcus Allen. And when I got to Kansas City, that was quickly deleted from my brain. I mean, it was like, you know, we're Raider haters here. Live and die like that, and Marty and Marcus is on our team now, so that added some extra fuel at that time as well. So, yeah, it kind of really, really got stoked during the 90s with Marty and with Gunther after that. And then maybe during the Vermeil years, that's when it kind of a little bit started to subside. But Rich Gannon was my teammate in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. You know, he's one of my guys. But then he went over to the dark side, and he had a great career. But he'll tell you, like you did, he'll tell you that that rivalry is real. And what's fun now from the outside, just as fun as it was from the inside, is that it seems to be stoked up again. And you got, you know, a coach in John Gruden that kind of carries that aura around. He likes to wear that on his shoulders. He doesn't mind being the bad guy. You know, he's got that scowl on the sideline. You know, how he handles the media. You know, there's some people that will be endeared to it, and there's some people that will absolutely hate it. And there's not very many people that usually are in the middle. So it's all played up. I just wish that Las Vegas, I wish obviously for many reasons, COVID was not around. But way, way down the list amongst health reasons and everything else is I wish that we would be there for Sunday Night Football around a bunch of screaming, crazy fans for a really good Raiders team in normal years. So we don't have that, but the next best thing is we still got the matchup.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And speaking of the matchup, how has Raider Week been this week in Kansas City? Of course, all the fans and all the sports radio and all that talk. I know they're getting, you know, lathered up for this game Sunday night, trying to get the revenge on the Raiders. And just how has it been? How's the intensity been from the fan base?
It's kind of been a little dull. And the part of the reason, not because we're overlooking the Raiders by any means, but because it's a bye week. We're coming off of a bye week, which I believe for some strange reason, which I had just heard in preparation that maybe three of the last 4 years, the Chiefs have had a bye before the Raider game, which is crazy to think about with all the different metrics that go into the season and the computer handling everything, that's been something that's been an output. But it's been a bye week, so you kind of drop down off the high of pretty much the first half of the season, and now you're getting the ramp back up. So it's one of those deals where, you know, you're starting to see it's Wednesday, they're back to the normal schedule, you had all the press conferences today. Now you'll start to see the buildup towards Sunday night, and the fact that you'll have Thursday night game, which is a great matchup, then you'll have the Sunday day games and afternoon games, everything's going to build up to that point. I think it's supposed to be relatively nice weather here, so you may have some outdoor gatherings to watch the game as well. So So I think it's just a little bit of a lull just because of the bye week, but it's going to build back up, and sure the media is going to build it up as well, and that's going to make it fun.
Danan Hughes is our guest here on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio. And Danan, you know, the Chiefs, the last time they played the Raiders, and the Raiders really played their best game by far, obviously, to beat the Chiefs there at Arrowhead, which has been just a house of horrors for Derek Carr and the Raiders. The Chiefs really retuned after that game and have changed. What's different about them, even though they're coming off the bye, what's different about the approach that Andy Reid has taken since that game, since the Raiders last saw the Chiefs?
I don't think there's anything that's changed. And, you know, from my vantage point, being the color analyst of the games and in the booth, I haven't seen anything drastically changing. I have seen them fine-tune some things, which is normal. I mean, No team wants to be the best in the first quarter of the season. You want to be able to grow. And they're continuing to grow. It was just, it was just a big stumbling block that the Raiders played a really, really good game. And the Chiefs didn't play a very good game. And yet still, we only lost by one touchdown and a two-point conversion. So I think the Chiefs recognize that they have to play better, that this is a better, more finely tuned Raider team. It's not a team that shoots themselves in the foot like we've seen in the past, have a lot of talent, but make a lot of bonehead errors. This team is more disciplined. Derek Carr is playing much better than he has in the past, hasn't really given up the ball, making smart decisions with the ball, and an incredible run game with Josh Jacobs. The offensive line has dictated the tempo in mostly every game this season for the Raiders. So the defense, Jonathan Abram, I think is the heartbeat of that defense at the safety position. Cleveland Farrell is a guy that also makes plays, but I think everything to me seems to be about Jonathan Abram in the back end, and he affects everything and everybody in the run game and the pass game. So we have to figure out how we're going to attack that. And remember, the Chiefs are an attacking team. And to me, some of the things even Patrick Mahomes talked about today, that he may be held on to the ball a little longer trying to make big plays instead of taking what the defense was giving him. But you guys at your linebacker position, I thought, had a great game plan against the Chiefs, where it was Littleton or Kwiatkowski that were basically spying Patrick Mahomes in the pocket. You guys rushed three or four from the defensive front side. Didn't really blitz a whole lot, which is a smart decision against Patrick Mahomes because he's phenomenal against the blitz. And you guys made it work. And, you know, tip your cap to it. But I think the team has recognized tendencies by every team that has tried to approach them very similarly to the Raiders. And they've made the necessary adjustments, just like you would do in any season.
You know, you mentioned the Raiders having to play the Chiefs multiple times coming off the bye week, and this is a storyline we've heard all week, and we'll hear all the way up to the game time. But Andy Reid and his record coming off a bye, 18-3, why is he so stinking good coming out the bye week?
I call him the mad scientist. I envision Andy Reid. What was that movie with Michael Myers, Austin Powers? I envision him with his pinky in his mouth like Austin Powers, just dreaming up different offenses that he can put forth and make this team successful. He's the mad scientist of offense, and now you're giving him an extra week. And you're giving all of this firepower an extra week of rest. So that's what I think makes them so successful. And you know, if you had it on a couple of occasions, you had a win or so, then you would say, okay, it's just a matter of fact. You know, it's just something that happens, coincidence. But throughout his career, having that record after a bye, you have to respect it. It's not an anomaly. It is a fact that he is better after the bye than any other team he faces. So you have that in hand, but as we all know, anything can happen on any given Sunday. The Raiders are going to come prepared. I'm sure John Gruden is talking to those guys and saying all the profound statements of, hey, you know, they're going to use the victory lap and try to, you know, shove it down our throats. Let's go and shove it back down their throats. And you know, we are the real deal. They don't think we are, and they think we're a clown show because we did a victory lap, all this stuff like that we have heard in the locker room. I'm sure that's what he's spewing out. It may not be in a bold, loud way, but just walking by, just so happening to walk by the offensive line room and say, hey, you know, they think we're clowns, and then just keep going. you know, those are the things that fuel the fire of guys, and they're going to show up. So I think every part of the storyline and the fact that we have a second good team in the AFC West makes this matchup really, really cool. And it's going to be possibly two teams that will represent AFC West in the playoffs later this year, regardless of if they're a one seed or down the line a little bit. So a lot on the line. The Raiders obviously do not want to have a fourth loss, and the Chiefs want to have some vengeance on having their first loss.
Yeah, Dane and Hughes, as always, thank you so much for being generous with your time. I know that this Raiders-Chiefs rivalry is good for the NFL, so the fact that it might be starting again with both of these teams, obviously the Chiefs being the class of the division thus far, and then the Raiders starting to really build something and a competitive team, a playoff squad, is going to be great. So, Dane, thanks so much, and best of luck to you the rest of the season.
No problem. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, there you go. Dane and Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver, now color commentator for the Chiefs broadcast. So good stuff there.
Great stuff. Yeah, great stuff.
As always. Okay, we're going to take a break here. We'll come back. We'll get to your calls. We have some callers have been waiting patiently. 702-365-9200. Get your spot before they're all gone. Tell us what you think about today's news, and tell us what you think about this Chiefs rivalry maybe bubbling back up again here with Q and Scott on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.
If you believe Tom Brady did fumble and that Franco Harris didn't catch that pass and call it the Immaculate Deception, then you found the right place. This is Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Silver and Black today here on Raider Nation Radio, always powered by our good friend Sam and Ash, injury attorney, 702-820-1234. Easy to remember that number. All right, if you haven't heard, a good size majority of the Raiders defense has been added to the COVID list. If they test negative, they can play Sunday. If someone else tests positive, then we got other issues. So far, the game on Sunday night has not been moved. So a lot of people are kind of an uproar. Oh, we're going to lose another Sunday night game. We don't know that yet. Hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully all these guys are going to be okay, not test positive, be healthy, and be on the field for the game against the Chiefs on Sunday. What do you guys think about all this? I want to hear Raider Nation's reaction. 702-365-9200 is the number. Also coming up here in just a few is going to be Jake Ellman from sportscasting.com about the trade that almost was. Randy Moss for Aaron Rodgers. Now, Q, if you think about, this is 2007.
Right.
You remember, of course, everybody remembers. We try not to mention the name, but the first pick of the draft for the Raiders in 2007.
Jamarcus Russell.
Right. Do you remember the rest of the players in that draft?
Yes. I remember enough of them. I remember the guy who went immediately after him to Detroit.
Yeah.
Calvin Johnson,
right. And he plays into this story, too, that we're going to talk to with Jake, which is really interesting. But the Raiders in 2007, Jamarcus Russell, the first pick overall that they took in the draft. Then with pick number 6 in the second round, they chose Zach Miller, the tight end out of Arizona State.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, he was.
For a quick minute.
He was for a little while.
He was Jamarcus's go-to guy.
Yes.
Went to Seattle and fell off.
Yes. Yep. Did not have a long, long career, but with the Raiders was pretty productive. Then in the third round, they had three threes that year. Quentin Moses, Mario Henderson.
Shout out to Mario Henderson, though.
Yeah, and Johnny Lee.
Oh, Higgins. Johnny Lee Higgins.
Yes.
That dude had an old school Bobby Brown haircut. That dude was so frustrating. Yeah. He was the original number 15. Before Crabtree was 15, it was Johnny Lee Higgins.
Yeah, and then Michael Bush, the running back.
That was a steal. That was a fourth-round pick, right?
Fourth-round pick, and then
that's when he broke his leg.
Yes, John Bowie in the fourth round as well. He was defensive back.
He was a bust.
Jay Richardson, Eric Frampton, Orrin O'Neal, and Jonathan Holland completed the Raiders draft class of 2007. But when we talk to Jake, we're going to talk about this trade that was actually discussed, and we'll have a little bit of fun with that because—
Wish it had been completed.
Yeah. It would, and that's the point of the conversation with Jake, is really to talk about, can you imagine what would have happened? And look, the past is the past, but every once in a while it's interesting to visit, because if you remember this past summer, when there was still all this speculation, which wasn't necessarily based in any reality about Derek Carr, was there was some talk about, and it was all just conjecture and rumor, no substance to it really, about Aaron Rodgers, right? Because Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay and things weren't going well. They had a new coach and they weren't supposedly getting along. And so suddenly it was like, well, Aaron Rodgers, yeah, he's older, he's towards the end of his career, but maybe, you know, that's the kind of guy that Gruden would quote unquote love, right?
Right.
So,
exactly.
So this story kind of born out of that, because there was some conversation that maybe the Raiders would go get Aaron Rodgers. And I have a good friend who was constantly, they got to go get Aaron Rodgers. They got to go get Aaron Rodgers. I'm like, it's not going to happen, man.
But no, Green Bay's going to try to win with him. That's what they're going to do.
Exactly. But it almost did. So we'll do that. 702-365-9200 is the number. We're going to get to some calls before we get to Jake.
Well, you know, real quick.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have had to trade for him. They had drafted him.
Well, that's a whole.
He was available.
Oof.
Who'd they take? Fabian Washington?
Fabian Washington. Exactly.
Still makes me angry.
It's amazing how, and this is not, you know, casting dispersions on picks and stuff like that, although we could do that, I guess. But
oh, man.
The guy you didn't pick and then goes on to be great, it's hard. It's because you depending on your scouting department and what people thought, you trust the people that are in the building, right? And if the people in the building weren't in love with a guy and they didn't take him, it can change the course of history.
Oh, man, look, if you go through the, and I don't want to open up this rabbit hole and go down it because it's so painful, but if you go down the history, most of it, of Raiders draft picks and then the guy that was drafted immediately following him, it's miserable. You'll be miserable.
Yes, you will. All right, well, we're going to go out on the phone line and bring in our guest, Jake Ellman. Jake writes for sportscasting.com. And, Jake, thanks for being with us here on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.
Good evening, guys. How are you guys?
Doing good. We had a lot of news today with the Raiders, so I appreciate you being accommodating and moving back a few minutes to still be with us. But I thought your piece was fascinating because as someone who's covered the Raiders for just 3 years, I don't go way back, but you look at this situation, you go back to 2007, the Raiders are looking for a quarterback. They need help as well. They signed Randy Moss before that. Obviously, Randy Moss is on the team, and there was a possibility here of the Raiders going out and getting Aaron Rodgers. At the time, and you can walk us through a little bit. At the time, Green Bay still had Brett Favre. He was aging, yes, but he was still there, and Aaron Rodgers was behind him. Talk a little bit about the situation that led to even the discussion around Green Bay shipping Aaron Rodgers to the Raiders for Randy Moss.
So just for background, you know, Florida this time of year, we get a lot of rain. So, you know, I took a day when it was raining. I went down the rabbit hole of the internet, and I started looking up, just out of curiosity, NFL what-ifs. And, you know, I stumbled upon something from March 2007, which was right before Oakland, the Raiders obviously in Oakland at the time, traded Randy Moss to New England, and there was a rumored discussion from multiple outlets, the Boston Herald, Pro Football Talk, that Oakland was considering trading Randy Moss and Randy Moss, a backup tight end in the 2009 pick, to Green Bay for Aaron Rodgers and a seventh-round pick. So obviously that trade didn't go through. Brett Favre came back in 2007. He then retired, and he went to my Jets, and we don't talk about what happened there. Rodgers took over the next year. Randy Moss spent a few years in New England. But it's one of those moves that it's really fascinating that you go back and you think, well, you know, Randy Moss obviously is in the Hall of Fame. Aaron Rodgers, whenever he retires, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. You could have had a trade if this went through, and you know, the Boston Herald was said that the Packers and the Raiders were on the verge of announcing. So it sounds like this was a deep trade. You know, this was deep in discussions that it could have went through with, you know, a guy who was in the Hall of Fame now and a guy who in a few years will be in the Hall of Fame too.
Think about this, and I want to get your opinion on it. If the trade had gone through, Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback. They don't need to draft one, so they don't go get Jamarcus Russell. So common sense tells you they take Megatron, Calvin Johnson. Could you imagine Aaron Rodgers to Calvin Johnson on the regular?
It's one of those dream duos, and on one hand, you would have had Brett Favre and Randy Moss, an aging Brett Favre, but, I mean, Randy Moss caught 23 touchdowns from Brady that year. I think he caught another couple in the playoffs. Maybe he catches 15 or 16 from Favre, who had a great year. But on the other side of it, and then obviously this is pre-Darren McFadden, but you have Lane Kiffin's offense, which didn't work out great in the NFL for a variety of reasons, but you see what he's doing in Ole Miss, what he did here at Florida Atlantic. You have a young Aaron Rodgers, who maybe would not have become the star that he did, that he eventually became quickly, because it took him a couple years in Green Bay. But Rodgers, you still had a couple of capable receivers. And then you add in Megatron, who from the get-go was Detroit's best player, and he held that role until he retired. I mean, both of those sides would have won big, especially the Raiders.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Again, Jake Ellman from sportscasting.com is with us talking about the trade that didn't happen that might have changed the course of a couple of teams. Of course, the Raiders, if they had the combination of Aaron Rodgers throwing to Calvin Johnson. But also on the other side, Jake, you know, Brett Favre basically kind of had to leave Green Bay, right? So we saw him leave Green Bay. But if he had not left Green Bay as well, maybe Green Bay has a shot to go back in 2008 and win again with Favre under center, and he gets to end his career as a Packer, which, of course, he went into the Hall of Fame as a Packer. That too, is another side of the story where two of these historic franchises really impacted by the trade that didn't happen.
I think with Favre, I think, you know, like I said, I grew up in New York. I grew up a Jets fan. I'm still a Jets fan. So that year with Favre was exciting until the end. And, you know, you could do an entire project based on this, but one of the first things that came to mind as I'm doing the research is, well, if Favre comes back in 2008, the Packers can't make the excuse of, well, we have Aaron Rodgers still in the mix. Maybe they still draft Brian Brohm or Matt Flynn, who Flynn obviously played for the Raiders at one point, but, you know, in my eyes, I think Favre comes back for another year. I could easily see Green Bay winning the Super Bowl after the 2008 season, the one that Pittsburgh won. And maybe Favre comes back in 2009. Maybe he says, listen, I've won two rings. I've done a lot. You know, I'm going to call it quits. Let me go out on top the same way Peyton Manning did a few years ago.
You know, you mentioned Lane Kiffin as the head coach, and he didn't want Jamarcus Russell. I remember that, you know, like it was – yesterday, he thoroughly said he did not want that. He wanted Calvin Johnson. Just, I mean, how do you think Aaron Rodgers' career could have projected as a Raiders head coach, kind of knowing that, hey, they've had a lot of turnover at coach and nothing's been consistent, but he's so stinking good?
I think if you gave, and obviously that was a much younger Lane Kiffin, but that was a Lane Kiffin who had worked with Matt Leiner, who had worked with Carson Palmer. So you give him another California quarterback who has already taken a couple years, redshirted of sorts under Brett Favre, and you say, all right, you know, you've had your chances to sit. Now we're going to throw you into the fire, but we're going to give you a number one overall pick at receiver. Would Aaron Rodgers have been the Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson who breaks out immediately? I don't know. You know, this was a much different time for quarterbacks. A lot of guys maybe didn't have that breakout year, that All-Pro, Pro Bowl caliber year until year three or four, but it would have been, I think it would have been a productive trio with Kiffin at head coach, Rodgers at quarterback. You still had some older guys on defense. You had Non Diasemoah, who was still young, but you had Warren Sapp. And then you throw in Megatron on offense. And this was a time, I mean, the Chargers were still pretty good, but you had a couple years where the AFC West was, you could win that division with 9 wins. So I think Oakland, they would have been relevant a lot quicker. Would they have still wound up in Vegas? I mean, that's way above my pay grade. But you would not have had the decade-plus of losing seasons, forgettable seasons, random guys that they were throwing at quarterback, all the coaching changes, if you had a capable franchise quarterback in Aaron Rodgers and a game-changing receiver like Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. And clearly we know how this trade not happening impacted the Raiders and of course, the Jamarcus Russell and all the stuff that had happened there since this didn't happen in 2007 and 2008. But for the Packers, they made the right move, right? They got their franchise quarterback by not letting him go. Were you able to find any details on why the trade did not go down?
The most I found was just that talks broke apart. There was nothing specific. Obviously, Rodgers would not have had, you know, the leverage at the time to say I don't want to go play in Oakland. And I did not find anything that said that Randy Moss did not want to play there. Obviously, you know, Randy Moss returned to the NFC North a few years later when New England traded him to Minnesota. But, you know, I really think that Randy Moss, obviously he had the record year in New England and he played in the Super Bowl, which the Patriots lost. But, man, if that trade went through, I have to think that Randy Moss would have came away with the Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, really interesting stuff. And Jake, we appreciate this, man. We'll keep watching. Make sure you follow Jake on Twitter. Jake Elman at 97, correct? Jake Elman 97 on Twitter. And also check out sportscasting.com. Some really interesting content up there, man. We appreciate you spending the time with us today. Have a great week.
All right. Thanks, guys. Stay safe.
All right. There you go. Jake Elman.
It's crazy, man.
It is. And, you know, I'm not a big what-if guy, Q, but I thought this one was just interesting to bring up as a little wild card on the show today.
No, it is. And for multiple reasons. And I think one thing that he said was the main reason the Raiders wouldn't have had so many retreads at quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, so many guys that they trotted in there and said, oh, this guy's going to be the guy. Oh, this guy's going to be. Like, there wouldn't have been a Dante Culpepper. There wouldn't have been a Flynn. There wouldn't have been Bruce Gretkowski. There wouldn't have, I mean, these names just pain me just going through them.
Yeah. And as happy as I am that for all the obvious reasons that the Raiders are here now in Las Vegas, the point he brought up, too, is if the Raider franchise wins again, they get a guy like Rodgers, the franchise quarterback who's going to be there for a long time and help you get there, and then you add in Calvin Johnson and who knows what after that, then maybe they don't leave. Maybe they have more leverage. Maybe they get a stadium, and this is a whole different ballgame. So I just thought it was interesting because those players involved there, the thought of Aaron Rodgers to Calvin Johnson, just to me, I mean, I'm envisioning
sick.
It in my head, and I'm just thinking to myself, holy, in the AFC West, and he's right. The Chargers had some good years then, but I will tell you that they far and above from an offensive standpoint, and what they had up front, they would have been unstoppable in many ways.
No doubt, no doubt. And I'm telling you, dog, I'm looking at this list, Andrew Walter, mm-hmm. Jason Campbell, and I liked him. Carson Palmer, Kyle Bowler, TP, Terrell Pryor, Matt McGloin. Come on, man. Jeez.
Yeah,
Aaron Brooks.
Aaron Brooks, yeah.
I couldn't stand that. I'm telling you, that's one guy I could not stand when they signed him. I thought that was going to fail. Did anyone not see what he was doing in New Orleans?
Yeah.
A whole lot of nothing.
Wow. Crazy. Had the revolving door there. It, you know, not as bad as Cleveland, but close.
It's close.
It's really
it's
close.
It's bad.
Okay, we are getting close here to the top of the first hour here. When we come back, start of the second hour, we're going to talk again about the Chiefs. We'll talk a little more about the current Chiefs, the matchup coming up on Sunday with our good friend Jay Binkley from 610 Sports in Kansas City, the Raiders flagship station there as well. We'll also take your call 702-365-9200 on a day when we found out seven players on the Raiders defense go to the reserve COVID list, but they may still play Sunday as long as they don't test positive. So there's the good news, and we'll keep you updated. We'll have Vinny Monsignor at 3:40. He'll get us the latest on that as well. Stay where you are, Raider Nation. You're listening to Q and Scott here on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.